The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
This is the Jackie Jones Challenge. Now here's your host, Jackie Jones.
Hi, this is Jackie Jones on the Jackie Jones Challenge, and today my guest is Gerald Mundis. He is a writer, speaker, and counselor. He is the author of 17 novels and 13 nonfiction books. Today we'll be getting into how to get out of debt and stay out of debt and live prosperously, as well as talking a little bit about overcoming under-earning. As a counselor, he helps people gain a happier and more prosperous relationship with money, including getting out of debt and increasing income. Please welcome my guest today, Gerald Mundis.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you today?
I am great. I'm so excited to have you on. I really appreciate you taking out some time to share with the listeners how to overcome under-earning, how to live prosperously, and how to conquer debt. Because this is the season when people seem to jump into debt with all feet, hands,
sure.
Arms, everything.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, and it's a subject of deep and abiding interest to me. It's something I've been working with for, well, going on 30 years now. And let me tell you first that I'm not speaking from any kind of abstract or Olympian or academic position. I was in the trenches myself. I was at one time in my life tremendously in debt. I had practically no income at all. I had no idea how I was ever going to get out of this situation. Let me tell you a little bit about that, because it was out of that pain, out of that despair, out of that frustration that my work on money originated. It was an attempt to find some solution for myself, and out of that struggle came eventually three different books on the subject of money, and beginning with debt. And now what happened was in the very early to mid-1980s, it was a terrible time in my life. I underwent the end of a lengthy marriage. It was a divorce that I hadn't wanted. I got very depressed. Things were falling apart around me in many ways. I'm a professional writer. I've been a writer all my life. So I have never had any kind of guaranteed income at all. And well, to cut an ugly story short, by the time I sort of bottomed on this, it was 1981, 82, and I found myself $50,000 in unsecured debt at that point. And in today's dollars, Jackie, that comes out to about $115,000. And that was completely unsecured debt. And my guaranteed income at that time was $350 a month. My expenses back then were about $3,000 a month.
Wow.
I was being destroyed. I was in a state of utter and abject despair, a sense of hopelessness, futility. I was waking up every morning with ground glass in my stomach and just thinking, oh, good Lord, there's another bill coming in today. You know, what am I going to do? How can I possibly ever get out of this? And I didn't think I ever would. Now, let me tell you, through my life as a writer, and I have been a journalist at different times in my life too, it was a natural reaction for me to begin looking around to see if there was any kind of help or suggestion or if anyone had ever done any work in these subject areas. And at that, you know, today people like Susie Orman and Dave Ramsey are writing. In those days, no one like that was writing about debt or personal money. There just weren't any books on it. And, you know, I found a couple of consciousness transformation seminars that were going on in those days, such as Life Springs and Loving Relationships Training, and little bits and pieces of that. I found other suggestions in meditation. Researching the subject as much as I could, I found some family organizations, cooperative farm extensions that talked a little bit about budgeting. And then I discovered an organization called Debtors Anonymous, which was very young, very new then. It was an offshoot, or at least modeled on Alcoholics Anonymous. I talked to a lot of people from there, and a fair amount of what they said made sense to me. So I began to practice a number of their principles and techniques. I combined them with the material that I had found from other areas, from meditational sources, consciousness seminars, family assistance organizations, and out of that great mix, I created what basically became a system for myself to get out of debt. And, you know, let me bring you forward now to 25 years later, practically, and it's been a long time since I've carried any debt at all. I'm completely out of debt. I paid off all my old debts. It took me about 6 or 7 years. A fundamental principle that I have practiced now since about 1984 is that one day at a time, I do not incur $1 worth of new unsecured debt, no matter what happens. And what that means, of course, is I have to rethink my life. And I have to rethink my attitudes, my perceptions. And let me tell you that a problem with debt, with chronic or whatever you want to call it, chronic indebtedness, compulsive indebtedness, just, you know, long-term carrying of unsecured debt. You always owe people money. And that's been going on for years. And we're not talking about secured debt, such as that backed up by a house in a mortgage or backed up by a car in a car loan. We're talking about unsecured debt, money that you borrow from friends, family, business associates, money that you charge on credit cards, goods and services that you buy there and don't pay for them in full at the moment you receive them. You know, examples of this are you need a root canal, but you don't have the money to pay your dentist, but, you know, he's been working with you for a few years, so he's happy enough to do the work and let you pay him off over 5 or 6 months, something like that. Now, that's fine, but the dentist doesn't have any collateral from you. That's unsecured debt. Or if my phone bill comes due and I don't pay my phone bill for a month or two, that's unsecured debt. The phone company doesn't have any security from me. If I get my if I get my roof fixed when I owned a house up in the country, I mean, one of the ways I incurred debt, and this goes back into the 1970s, is I needed a new roof shortly after I bought the house. I didn't have the money for it, so I made arrangements with a local roofer who knew I had just moved into this house. I was going to stay there, so I was good for the money. And I gave him the job at that point was $2,000. Remember, that was a long time ago. The job probably now is about $12,000. But I gave him $1,000 up front so he could buy materials with it. And he agreed to let me pay him off the other $1,000 over a period of 12 months. So what happened was I kept going deeper and deeper into debt, and these are ways that anyone can go into debt and the ways that most people do. And so, you know, a quick definition of unsecured debt is any money that you owe to someone that isn't backed up by security or collateral in any form and any amount. And I'll tell you right now that approximately 30 to 35 million Americans are completely overwhelmed by personal debt, meaning they're never going to get out of it without some radical transformation in their life, which is highly unlikely ever to happen. And there are another 35 million who are living in some level of daily stress and discomfort because of this. This is an epidemic situation in the United States. And really, what this kind of debt does is it crushes a life. It sucks all the joy and the pleasure out of it. It keeps you in a state of constant worry and anxiety and fear, resentment, angers, deep frustration. It really poisons a life.
Now, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
When you said those people who are in debt and they'll never get out, is that because it's a choice, a lifestyle choice that they will not make because they can get out of debt if they chose to? Or they can't.
Nearly any human being in the country right now, anyone who's listening to this show, practically anyone you've ever met, can get out of debt if he or she truly wants to. Now, I'm not saying just straighten up and fly right. I'm going to talk about how we get into debt, and I'll give you some strong suggestions as to how you can get out of it. But, you know, so maybe one out of every 100 or 200 people who are overwhelmed by debt now, one out of 200 maybe, 250, is in a special set of circumstances, physically challenged in some fashion, of a highly diminished capacity, intellectual capacity, and in some way deeply disadvantaged and unable to function at a normal capacity. Almost everybody else can and will get out of debt if they want to. And usually people won't go to the lengths that are necessary until the pain gets so bad that they can't stand it anymore, which is what happened with me. But many people just don't think there is a way out, so they just live and they endure this pain forever and ever, and life is deeply oppressive for them, very unsatisfying. Most of the problem with debt comes from distorted attitudes and perceptions about one's self, about money, and about one's self in relationship to money. Such as, I don't understand money. No one ever taught me about it, so you can't really expect me to be as good with it as other people are. Women, and still today, this exists much more frequently than you would think in this day and age, but it does. Women can't handle money, so you can't expect me as a woman to be able to handle it like men do. A sense of entitlement. I'm home alone all day with three young children under the age of seven. I'm entitled to buy that designer dress, to charge it. I'm entitled to treat myself. Or I worked my tail off as a graduate student or an intern, and now that I'm graduating, I deserve to charge that vacation in Hawaii. You know, sense of entitlement or grandiosity. The classic example, like Muhammad Ali, I am the greatest, and therefore, out of my grandiosity, I buy drinks for the house all the time, I buy lavish presents for people, and I'm just burning money. On the flip side of that is a sense of very low self-esteem. I'm worthless, I never was very good, all I'm really worth in life is a dime and a sandwich. So I always keep myself out of money. And another one quite common is money corrupts, that there is something evil, something unsavory, unwholesome about having money. The idea that people who do have money in any large amount at all have to be somehow immoral or thievish or corrupt in some fashion. And if I believe that about other people, well, those people that have money, I mean, they're brutal and they're unethical and they're thieves and they're ruthless. Well, I don't want to look at myself as being brutal and a thief and ruthless. So if I had money, but I believe that about people who have money, then I have to start considering myself corrupt and ruthless. So I find ways to keep myself out of money. Let's say that the primary cause of going into debt is that. And of course, there's tremendous peer pressure in the country right now, and has been probably for close to 50 years, to buy, to spend, to keep up with everybody else. The acceptance of credit cards, for example, in a credit line, people look upon that as an asset. They say, well, I've got a $10,000 credit line, and you think that's an asset. But it's not. What it is there's someone out there who's willing to lend you $10,000. It's not an asset that you have. It's someone's willing to let you go into debt for $10,000. But it's become an accepted way of life among so many people, and the attitude is, gee, as long as I can make the monthly payments, I can afford it. Well, no, I can't really, because these people end up, as I myself did, and I was not much of a spendthrift. My problem was essentially under-earning on the other side of it, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Lost my train of thought there for a minute. Sorry about that. When I am thinking that I can afford things if I can just make my monthly payments, what happens is, in 9 times out of 10, people with that idea are living only one or two paychecks ahead of catastrophe. They don't have any kind of backup money. They have very little in the way of savings or assets. If they lose their job, or if it's a two-worker family where both the husband and wife are working and one of them loses the job, they collapse almost instantly and start plunging into debt because they have built this fragile house of credit cards, and it's not money that has really been theirs. Now, there are a couple of things to do about this. And let me say that I'm going to talk about ceasing to incur brand new debt and then how to kind of stabilize and then how to actually begin getting out of debt and then staying out. And this is a preface, actually, to overcoming under-earning. It's a great paradox here. You will find people who will say to you, but, you know, how can I afford to stop incurring debt? I don't have money to meet my monthly bills each month, so I've got to borrow money. The kids need new clothes for school, or the car needs snow tire, or something like this, and I don't have the money. What do you expect me to do? Well, you cannot get out of debt by borrowing money.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't get out of debt by going deeper into debt. It's never going to work. People don't stop and think about this. You just panic. You feel you have this urgent need, so you go out and you incur more debt. And you think somehow magic is going to happen, and next year it's all going to be easier. Now, if, let's say, hypothetically, my income is $40,000 or $50,000. Let's say it's $50,000 a year. And I'm raising a family, and I've got a shortfall in there. I can't quite make it. Or $40,000, I can't quite make it. And so I'm going into debt at the rate of, say, $5,000, maybe even $10,000 a year to make up the shortfall. Well, in the year 2007, if my salary is $40,000, but my needs are $45,000, next year my salary is probably not going to be much higher, if higher at all. And now I have not only a shortfall of $5,000 coming up that I'm facing in the year 2008, but I've got an additional $5,000 worth of debt that I incurred in 2007 that I have to make payments on. There is no way out of this situation if I continue to incur debt. And for an under-earner, for someone who's not bringing in enough money to meet his or her needs on a humane basis, on a monthly schedule or each year, what happens is that debt becomes a big enabler. If I'm not bringing in enough money really to support myself in a given year, and I rely on borrowing money to make up that shortfall, what's happening is that I'm escaping the consequences of my under-earning. I'm able to shield myself from them for a while. And some people can carry this off for a number of years because they still have credit left. They can borrow from more people. And when necessary, they start downsizing their life a little bit, but the debt has accumulated and it's taking ever more of the money available to them. And in the end, there's nothing but misery. So the very first step in overcoming under-earning is ceasing to incur debt. So there are a number of ways to do this. Among other things, one wants, and please understand that, you know, what we're talking about today in the space of an hour or less, we're just trying to touch on a few elements that I actually wrote two full books about. So we can't possibly summarize everything. I can't give you all the concepts and all the techniques in this time. We can only touch on a couple of the highlights. But I can give you some very powerful techniques. And, you know, back for just revisit for a moment the distorted attitudes and perceptions that people have about money. Another one is that people use money as a mood changer. You know, you're very depressed, and even your best friends will tell you, well, why don't you go out and buy something pretty? That'll make you feel better. Or you've accomplished a tremendous piece of work, and you want to escalate that, or your boyfriend or girlfriend has just left you and you want to solace yourself and you want to comfort yourself. So you go out, and actually people who do that use money the way other people use alcohol and drugs, just to change their mood. And in there also is the belief that somehow, frequently, everything's going to be all right. The big fix is going to arrive. I'm going to graduate and get a tremendously high-paying job. Aunt Tilly is going to die and leave me money. I'm going to strike oil. I'm going to move to another city in a year or two, and it'll be easier to find work. And the idea that something's going to happen, the big fix is going to arrive and make it all better. But it never does. And so with these attitudes and perceptions, what you want to do is replace them with new attitudes and perceptions about yourself and about money, about yourself in relationship to money. And I'll do a couple of them, for example. Right now, no matter how bad your situation is, you have to understand that you're perfectly okay in this sense. That right now, you have everything that you fundamentally need. Right now, you have a roof over your head, you have food to eat for the day, and you have clothes to wear. And if you have a family, your family has a roof over its head. You may well not own that roof, but there is a physical roof over its head. They have clothes to wear. There's food to eat. And when your mind is racing, when the fear is threatening to overwhelm you, when the resentment, when the despair is there, you need to breathe, to stop for a moment, and ground yourself in this, that right now you're perfectly okay. You have everything you need. You have a roof over your head, you have food to eat, and you have clothes to wear. Next is to realize that no matter how badly they're trying to attack you, you're not living for your creditors. You know, there is no debtor's prison anymore. And people are not going to drive you from village to village, pelting you with garbage and shouting insults at you. You know, you don't have to turn over every single dollar you make to your creditors. You need to, it's a technique that requires some fortitude. We'll talk about the techniques in a moment or two. But you're going to need to get in touch with your creditors, and you're going to need to negotiate as best you can with them. And you can't, you just can't get blood from a stone. And you, if you're taking every extra dollar that's coming in to try and pay off your creditors, you're depriving yourself terribly. You're probably depriving your family terribly if you're living with a family. And what that deprivation does is cause you to erupt, you know, every 6 weeks or every 2 months and go out and buy something else again because you can't stand the pain and you want some relief from it. Next is to realize that your feelings are not facts. That because you feel that everything is overwhelming, because you feel that it's hopeless, because you feel that we'll never get better, that's not evidence for any reality, no more than my sense of hopelessness and despair and my feeling of waking up with terrible fear every morning and just a horror in the pit of my stomach that, how am I ever going to pay this next bill that's coming in? What am I ever going to do? Those were feelings, but they were not facts. You know, life these many years later is significantly different for me. So the feelings did not reflect reality. They were definite feelings. They didn't feel good, but they weren't evidence for reality. Next is to realize, too, that no matter how difficult or troubled your situation is, that it's not Armageddon. You know, the missiles aren't going to be launched. Blood is not going to run in the streets. It's not going to be a catastrophe. And another attitude, perception that you want to bring into your life is the realization that no matter how thin your life is or how deprived you may feel you are, you probably have much more than you think you do. And a technique, because I'll start talking about techniques next, but I might as well just bring one in here to help you with this new attitude, is to sit down, and I'd suggest you sit down tomorrow, maybe even tonight. Take out a yellow pad or a notebook of some sort, and just list as many as you can, but say list at least 30 things in your life for which you are grateful. Now, we're not talking, you know, maybe your life is terribly beset and you're suffering in a lot of areas. We're not talking about ignoring those or pretending they're not there, but what happens is that your vision has become so distorted and discolored by the pain that you have stopped seeing the things in your life that really are good, that you appreciate. And so when you take the time to start forcing yourself just to look and just recognize that there are some things in my life that are good, that are pleasurable, that are lovely, that I'm grateful for, that I appreciate, that are meaningful to me, you help begin breaking the grip of this terrible despair. Now, for some very practical steps, in a simple way to begin, in turning your life around so far as ceasing the debt and getting out of debt, is first, you know, surrender. Sit down someplace alone, quietly, look at your life. Look back over the last X number of years. How long has it been since you have been absolutely free from unsecured debt? It's probably been a very long time. That years and years you have always carried some form or another of unsecured debt. And look at the trouble that it's caused in your life. Look at the pain that it's caused. Look at maybe the trouble it's caused in your marriage. This thing breaks up marriages. It causes adult brothers and sisters not to speak to each other anymore. It causes rifts between parents and adult children. It's devastating. It breaks apart friendships. You borrowed money from a friend. You haven't been able to pay him or her back, and that person becomes angry with you. Take a look at the consequences of what your constant incurring of unsecured debt and the carrying of debt has done, and say, wow, I've got a problem with this. I have a problem with debt and incurring unsecured debt. And just surrender. Now, surrender doesn't mean, you know, a lot of people think surrender means giving up and somehow I've lost, I failed, I'm a loser. No, one of the primary meanings of surrender is to let go of one thing in favor of something else. So what I'm asking you to do is kind of recognize and admit this has caused a lot of trouble in my life, a lot of pain. It's gotten out of hand. I'm willing now to let go of that in order to get a new way of living in my life that's a better way, a more pleasing way, a more pleasurable, a more rewarding way. So after the surrender, the next necessary step is, from this day forward, one day at a time, don't incur even $1 more worth of unsecured debt. When you think that you need something, really examine, is this a need or a want? Is it a real need or something you want or have talked yourself into thinking that you need? There's a vast difference between the two, but most people don't differentiate between needs and wants. So you'll find that a lot of things that you think you have to have at the moment are wants, preferences, more than they are needs. You know, you need a telephone. In today's society, you have to have a telephone. But you don't have to have a $500, you know, iPod telephone. Or you don't have to have video downloads, links. You don't have to load this thing up with images of your friends and Google search capacity and everything. You need to be able to talk to people on the phone. But you don't need to be spending, and some people spend several hundred dollars a month on cell phone bills. You know, that's just one little silly area in which you have to differentiate between a need and a want. When it's a legitimate need, you know, there's a car repair. And it's the only car in the family, and the kids have to be driven to the bus. Okay. So what the need is to get the kids to the bus, not to drive the kids to the bus. So you start to look, is there any other way I can get my kids to the bus? Offer exchange with neighbors, see if there's any kind of carpooling available, talk to the school, if you live in a rural area, to see if a feeder bus can be sent for a week or something. Look for and draw up a list, 20 ways I could get my kids to the bus stop without paying for a car repair tonight. Try and find new ways to get what you need. barter if you have to do that, exchange services with people, defer the need until a later date unless it's absolutely fundamental, and if it's fundamental, find another way to get the effect, the consequence, such as getting your kids to the school bus as opposed to you actually driving in your car the kids to the school bus. Keep a complete record of your expenses for a solid month. Divide your life into categories, maybe 30 categories or so, your spending. Other than the mortgage or the rent, and maybe a fairly decent guess at the basic utility bill, most people can't tell you where their money goes every month.
Mm-hmm.
They put $100, $200 in their pocket on a Monday, and by Wednesday it's just about gone, and they really don't know where it went.
Right.
And once you begin to track it, and I'm not asking you even to control it, I'm just saying track it. Just take a look at it. Find out how much you actually spend on dry cleaning. Find out how much you spend on coffee out. I mean, there's the classic case of the guy who was here in New York City. He was a carpenter, and he bought cups of coffee out. A cup of coffee out at your average deli here in New York City runs anywhere from 95 cents to $1.35. Now, we're not talking Starbucks. We're just talking from a diner. Three cups a day can be close to $5.
Mm-hmm.
That's $5 a day, 5 days a week. $25 a week is $110 a month. Times 12 months, we're talking $1,200 to $1,400 after tax dollars that's just being spent on coffee out.
Right.
And when you begin to see where that money is going, the simple fact of keeping the record itself, how much did you spend on magazines, on you know, daily newspapers, how much you're spending actually on gasoline, how much you're spending on bus fare if you live in a city. The simple act of keeping that record very often reduces a person's expenses just by 5 to 10%.
Absolutely.
Yep.
You're listening to Jackie Jones on the Jackie Jones Challenge with Gerald Mundus. And I can attest to the record keeping because I did that many years ago.
Yeah.
And you absolutely, when you see where you're spending your money, you will stop spending your money that manner. I don't even carry cash on me, so my kids know to not even come to me for cash because I don't carry cash for that reason, because if you have cash on you, they will get it from you, or you could be out and it could be any little thing that they really don't need, but just because you have the cash on you, you will spend it. So everything goes on, you know, the debit card for me, because everyone takes it now. When I first got a debit card years back, it wasn't that popular because I was kind of like you, a front runner in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And doing those types of things. And you know, you really need to take a look and see where your money's going, because when you see, you know, if you work outside of the home and you're buying coffee and lunches and a snack, and it really adds up every week.
Yeah.
And if you have cash on you, it's so easy to just put your hand in your pocket and pull it out and not even consider where it's going.
Tremendously so. Now, I myself don't have a problem carrying cash. But on the other hand, I don't have two young kids around anymore. You know, my boys are grown up and adults now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a problem for me either, but, you know,
well,
I do have it.
I do
know.
Carry a debit card with me also, and I was delighted to hear you say debit card.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not
mm-hmm.
carrying cash, then an ATM card or a debit card will do.
Mm-hmm.
But what you don't want is to be carrying a charge card.
Right.
Which brings me right to the next technique in ceasing to incur debt. I want you to get rid of your credit cards. I mean, you really need to close out your credit cards because, you know, they're misnamed. What a credit card is a debt card and not a debit card. It's a debt card. It's just instant debt. If I have a credit card in my pocket, I can walk down the street here in New York City. I can turn instantly off the street, go into Best Buy, and buy myself a $1,500 LCD television. I can go instantly into debt with a credit card. And that's really all I can do with a credit card is I can go into debt. So it is essential to get rid of your credit cards. Now, you know, you're still going to owe the money on them that you owe, but you need to close. Well, this gets a little complicated. I don't want you to be thinking down the road for credit needs further on. But for it, the odds are, if you have trouble with debt, your credit record is probably shot already anyway. The odds are. If your credit has been absolutely clean and you've never been late on any of your payments, which means that you're going to have a good credit rating if you want to buy life insurance, for example, or to buy a house, then I would probably want you to keep your one or two oldest accounts, the ones you've had the longest for 10, 15 years or so. Don't close them out, but simply cut up the cards and don't use those cards at all anymore and pay off anything that's on them. The only time you ever do this way is when your credit record is absolutely clean. If your credit record is less than stellar, forget about it. It's not going to hurt you to close out all your accounts completely and start over, and there are ways to rebuild credit later on. We don't have the time to talk about that today.
You have to revisit us to talk about that.
Yes. And there are ways to get secured credit cards and other things, but it's too complicated at the moment to go into.
Mm-hmm.
So you get rid of the credit cards. Also, this will take some strength too, all the people who've been willing to loan you money up to now. Tell them, thank you, I really appreciate everything you've done for me in the past, but please don't lend me any more money. Because all I'm going to do is go deeper into debt to you. So get rid of your enablers. And next, you know, approach your creditors and negotiate as best you can. If your credit is bad and you're suffering terribly under debt, well, your creditors aren't going to be happy with you, and they undoubtedly haven't been happy with you for a long time. Only worst case scenario, if you do get a salary garnished, only under federal law, only one creditor can garnish your salary at a time. So threats from others are empty threats. I mean, it's no fun to have a salary garnished. And please, you know, pick up both my books or other people's books too. Pick up Dave Ramsey's book. You know, he knows what he's talking about also. Mm-hmm. And get some help on negotiating with creditors. You know, I love my own books. And go to a library. Read them in a library. Buy them secondhand if the cost is, you know, they're both available in paperback. But you need a fuller idea of how to negotiate with creditors than we can go into right now. But negotiate with them. You can't pay them more than you can afford to pay. If all you've got is $40 a month after meeting all your current bills and needs, $40 left over to your creditors, that's all you can give to your creditors. Even if collectively they want $500 from you a month, that's all you have. You can't give them more, or you'll continue to go deeper into debt. Next step, once you've stopped incurring debt, once you start to stabilize, build a contingency fund. Every person in this country needs at least 3 months total living expenses in a savings account of some sort or another to protect themselves against unforeseen events like the tires blowing out, you need new snow tires, or the loss of a job. You need at least 3 months living expenses to cover yourself. So start building a contingency fund, even if you can only do it by $10 a week or so. And last technique, build some awareness by looking at your friends, your business associates and acquaintances. Start listening to the way they talk about money and debts and complaints about how expensive things are or how much they owe. You know, no one's going to tell you exactly what they owe because it's a taboo subject here. But start looking on radio and television. Look at all the advertisements, how many times you're being pitched each day to buy, spend, charge, owe money. Start building that awareness and realize the kind of assault that's being waged against you. That will help you in this. Then we want to talk about, let's talk about under-earning now. Okay?
Yep.
all right. There are basically, it took me about 5.5 to 6.5 years of not incurring any new debt before I came to understand that the largest problem for me was that I was an under-earner, a chronic under-earner, that most of my life I had not really earned enough money to be able to meet my needs. And by that, I just mean a humane level of shelter, clothing, and food with at least a little bit left over for reasonable entertainment, going to a movie now and then, having a dinner out now and then. And we hope another little bit left over to begin making some savings. You know, that's what I consider the minimum to be able to do on a monthly basis to say that you're not under-earning. And of course, in this is you're not going any deeper into debt. You're not carrying any debt. So, you know, I define under-earning then as repeatedly to gain less income than you need or than would be beneficial. And by beneficial, I mean to be able to put a little savings away and a little recreation, and usually for no apparent reason and despite your desire to do otherwise. But year after year after year, that's been what's happening. Now, as a writer, you know, my income was very uneven and erratic, and every now and then a year would come by, and I'd make a nice, decent amount of money. And I would look at myself, well, and if the question never occurred to me, because I had never defined the term under-earning, but how could I be an under-earner if now and then I made money like this? Well, you know, that's like the alcoholic saying that every 6 months or so I went home from the bar with someone who was gentle and lovely and understood me. And forget about the other, you know, 5.5 months, she or he staggered home from the bar and passed out and was lonely and miserable. You remember the single good times now and then, the times you've done all right. So in order to overcome under-earning, I define three basic, what I call the do-nots. The first is do not incur any new unsecured debt. You simply can't ever overcome under-earning or emerge from it if you continue to incur new debt, which just allows or facilitates or helps you to continue under-earning, because it allows and helps you to escape the consequences of your under-earning. Sooner or later, those consequences will catch up with you, but some people can hold out for many years before it all collapses around them. It gets worse each year, but many years can pass before the final catastrophe hits. Now, you know, when I'm committed to not incurring any new unsecured debt, I might say, but good grief, what am I going to do? Okay, I'm not going to borrow any money. I'm not going to take those goods or services without paying for them. But what am I going to do? How am I going to get what I need? Well, this is something like optical illusions. You know, when you were a kid, the first time someone showed you a drawing that was an optical illusion, and they said, you know, in those trees there are all sorts of animals. You know, there are squirrels, and there are raccoons, and there are birds, and you looked at that drawing, and you couldn't see them. You know, you just saw the leaves of the trees. But then suddenly you looked, and maybe someone pointed one out to you, and then suddenly you could see it. And from that point on, you were able to master at least that form of optical illusion, you know, another way of seeing. Now, when I'm committed to not incurring new debt, I have to start looking at my life and reexamining it and wondering, well, what else can I do? And I find a new way of looking at my life and looking at myself in life. I, for example, when I was in the early stages of overcoming under-earning, went back to magazine writing. I'm primarily a book writer, but I hadn't written for magazines for a year. But although it was nothing I wanted to do on a regular basis, and for many writers, particularly writers of books, magazine writing is not an easy thing. But it was a little stopgap. It brought in some extra money for me. I also, without going into great detail about it, in examining what my skills were, what my abilities were, essentially recognized that I knew more about how to continue writing in the face of what most people consider writer's block than practically anybody else I'd ever met. So I developed a small system for breaking writer's block that's exceedingly effective. I began doing it as a consultant and a coach. I have worked with people who've had many books in a row on the New York Times bestsellers list. I've worked with people who've just writing their first book ever. I went on to deliver this at writers' conferences. We recorded it at one writers' conference. I then eventually built a website where I sold the seminar on it. None of this would have happened if I hadn't. And let me tell you also, one of the clients I worked with was a television writer who, about a year after I worked with him, invited me to come and work on a television show for a while. So none of this at all would have happened if I hadn't been committed to not incurring new debt. That forced me to look anew at my life and figure out how else might I be able to bring in more money. So First, do not is do not incur new debt. Second is do not take work that pays you less than you need. Now, this is a little bit tricky, but if my need is $50,000 a year and I take a job that pays me $35,000 or $40,000, debt is inevitable. I will go deeper into debt. Also, if I'm working 40 hours a week for this, there is no room in my life for other work to come in or for me to do another job. So I have to determine how much money I really need to live on a humane basis without incurring new debt, and then that's what I'm going to need to earn from a job. And if I take a job that pays me less than that, I'm never going to get out of this situation. Now, if I'm working at the moment and I have had an awakening and I suddenly realize, good grief, you know, I've been in debt all my life and debting is a problem for me, I'm going to stop incurring new debt. And I look and I say, good grief, second time, I've been an under-earner, you know, and that's behind my debting. Now, me, it took me 5.5 to 6.5 years of not debting before I finally recognized what was behind. Because although I wasn't incurring new debt over those years, I kept coming right to the edge of it again. You know, where I'd run out of money and it would become very perilous and I have to be scrambling and finding new ways to bring in a few bucks here and there until I finally understood that behind my debting was this under-earning. So if I suddenly have these enlightenments and I'm going to stop debting, stop under-earning, but I'm making $35,000 a year when I need 50, I shouldn't just quit my job. You know, walk out. That $35,000 is at least better than nothing at the moment. But I have to realize that I need, if at all possible, to start cutting down my hours at work so I can have some time to begin applying for other jobs. Now, people sometimes tell you, but you know, I work at the cannery and the cannery only pays $11.50 an hour. It's the only job in town. Well, then you're going to have to move to another town. I mean, sometimes what we have to do is radical to stop under-earning. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's not that radical. And now let me just toss in one technique that I teach to people because it might be helpful here in these do-nots. In this one, do not take work that pays you less than you need. But here's a technique that I call the 25% solution. I would like you to think in terms of taking 4 hours a month. That's, you know, one Saturday morning, one Sunday afternoon, or it's 2 hours on one Saturday morning, 2 hours on another Saturday morning each month. And I would like you to think of work that you can do for those 2 hours. Examine your life. If you're a computer, if you're a software engineer now, well, okay, you've got that skill. That's a professional skill. If you also happen to be a mountain trout stream fisher person, oh, hell, that sounds so politically correct. I hate saying that stuff, but anyway, you know, if you fish mm-hmm. and you're a fly fisher and you're really skilled at it, well, although that's a recreational hobby thing you do, it's a skill you have that someone may pay to have you teach them. Mm-hmm. Or if you can sew, or if you're an auto mechanic. Whatever you are, any skills or abilities you have that you either use at your current job or occupation or that you use in recreation, I would like you to figure out how you can sell that skill or ability for 4 hours a month. That's not much time at all, 4 hours. But I would like you to make 25% more per hour than you now make in your normal profession or your job. In other words, if you make $10 an hour, I would like you to be able to sell these 4 hours for $12.50 an hour. Mm-hmm. If you make $50 an hour, I'd like you to be able to sell these 4 hours for $62.50 an hour. And if you're fortunate enough to be someone who makes $100 an hour, well, you sell those 4 hours for $125 an hour. Mm. And this accomplishes several things. One, it brings real money into your life. I mean, actual money that you can spend, additional money that you didn't have before, for not a huge investment of your time. Only 4 hours out of 4.3 weekends. That's all we're asking you to do. also, just as importantly, it shows you that you are worth more on the marketplace than you thought you were. It shows you that you can get more money for your skills and abilities than you thought you did before. This is a tremendously important thing to understand and know. Another technique, sit down with a yellow pad and just list 50 ways that you could bring in additional money next month, anywhere from $5 to $5,000. Now, you know, this could range from something like, well, I could bag groceries for a little bit at the local supermarket, to I could coach aspirant young basketball player. I was a star college basketball player, and we've got somebody at the high school here and who maybe could improve vastly if he had some semi-professional lessons. It can be zany, and you can put down 50 things. Most of them could be things you would never consider doing in your life. Maybe you just never want to bag groceries. That's perfectly okay. I just want you to list 50 things. You don't have to do any of them. I just want you to start showing yourself that there are some things you could do that could bring in a bit more money each month, maybe even a significant amount of money. And also what happens is, as you start listing ways, ideas begin to occur to you, things that you never would have thought of otherwise. And out of a list of 50, you may find two or three that actually have some appeal and that are feasible. Again, we're beginning to break the chains that have held your thinking in such a constrained level, and we're beginning to show you that there are ways that you can expand and increase your income and your own life and sense of self-worth in this. Now, so back to the do-nots. First one was do not incur any new debt. Second one was do not take work that pays you less than you need. The third one is do not say no to money. Now, let me qualify that. That's conditional. Do not say no to money if it's money that, one, doesn't violate the first do not. In other words, if it's debt, if it's credit, well, yes, say no to it. But if it's not debt or if it's not credit, if it's money you could earn, money you could receive for performing some service, don't say no to it. And if it's also, if it's not money that pays you less than you need. You know, if you're making $10 an hour now and someone offers you to pay $5, someone offers you to work at $5 an hour, well, that doesn't work very well for you. That would just escalate your under-earning. So it needs to be paying you at least what you're making now and preferably a minimum of 25% more. But if it's paying anything more than you're making than making you now, and it's not more, and I'm not talking about working overtime 20 hours a week or taking a second job all day Saturday. I'm talking about the opportunity for occasional or intermittent money. And what happens is most of us, several times a day, ideas will occur to us as to how we might expand our incomes, as to how we might expand our life activities in an income-producing way. And then we think, that would never work, or, I don't have the education for that, or, that's not my temperament, or, they'd never hire me for that. And we kill that idea. And this happens to most people many times a day. And over a period of years, finally, you'll eliminate it happening at all. Those ideas just won't occur to you anymore because you've shot them down so many times for so many years. So start listening to ideas that arise to you. And instead of killing that idea right away, explore some of the more appealing and what appear to be more feasible of those ideas. Don't say no to it right away. When money is there, I'll give you one fast example on that. In breaking, after I developed the seminar on breaking writer's block, someone I knew called me from Washington, D.C., and this was from the National Education Association, and it involved their speech writers. And she told me that the problem they had with their speech writers was that they kept had to write about the same topics over and over again, different op-ed pieces for different magazines around the country or newspaper supplements, and their writers got stale. They burned out. They got flat. And she asked, you know, could I help with that? And, you know, my first thought first one she called and said, Jerry, I understand you break writer's block. You know, I perked up thinking, income, here's a possible job. And then when I heard what she wanted, my heart fell, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I break writer's block. What do I know about corporate speech writers for institutions? I don't know anything about that. I write novels myself, and I break writer's block. And then I heard myself, I was about to say, I'm sorry, you know, I really don't do that kind of thing. I wish I could help you. I heard myself about to say that. And then I realized I was about to say no, and I forget exactly what the amount was they were offering that time. It was maybe $1,500, maybe $2,000 for a day's work. And I was about to say no to $1,500 through going down to Washington for a day. And I said, it's an interesting situation. May I call you back tomorrow on this? And that night I sat and I looked at my seminar on breaking writer's block, and I thought about corporate speech writers, and I called a friend of mine who'd been a speech writer at one time. I chatted with him for about half an hour, and I roughed out a system that would work for them. I called her back the next day, and I said, yes, I'd be delighted to do it. I went down there. I called the seminar Word Renewal, and they loved it. And, you know, and I made money. But there I was about to say no to money. Money had called me. You know, money picked up the phone and called me. I hadn't even gone looking for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm saying don't say no to money. A fundamental point here.
Fabulous.
And I think, you know, we could go on and on, but I think that pretty much covers the basics.
Great. So for under-earners, you need to stop debting, and then you need to know how much money you need in order to get a job that covers your expenses.
Yes, and that involves writing out, if you track your expenses for a month or two, you'll begin to get a sense of what your real needs are.
Okay, so then you can determine exactly how much you need to bring
right.
in, and then be open to money, and when it comes to you, receive it.
Yes, and any ideas that occur to you that will bring you money. Keep in mind a gratitude list now and then. It's a great way to put your spirits back on track. Keep in mind that you're perfectly okay at this moment. Don't take work that pays you less than you need. And read both my books.
Absolutely. Read those resources. They are wonderful. Gerald Munda, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time, and I'm in gratitude to have you in my circle of friends. And I look forward to having you possibly come back sometime in the future when the listeners have at that time gone through their expenses and created a proper budget for themselves and got into the area of developing money, and then maybe you can help them restructure their credit situation or direct them in the way to go.
I'd be delighted.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time.
It's been my pleasure, Jackie. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Jackie Jones Challenge. To find out how you can host your own podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.